This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
As Japan suffers multiple reactor accidents with radiation of the land and sea, sadly one woman is vindicated again. Dr. Helen Caldicott is a physician, author, and speaker known throughout the world for her clear warnings about the dangers of both nuclear weapons and nuclear power. Helen Caldicott woke us up with the film and book If You Love This Planet, now the title of her own weekly radio show. I'm Alex Smith, host of Radio EcoShock. Dr. Caldicott, I am honored to welcome you to this program.
Thank you, Alex.
Let's get right to work. What would you like to tell the world about the nuclear disasters in Japan following the earthquake and tsunami on March 11th?
Well, what can I say? Fancy building six rather faulty General Electric Mark I reactors upon an earthquake fault. Japan has been known forever as to having earthquakes. The disaster is not finished. It's ongoing. In fact, nobody can predict how long it will go. I mean, I don't know. It could go on for years. If there is a very large release of radiation or a meltdown and the wind's blowing over Japan, it's only a tiny, tiny country. That could be it. I mean, Chernobyl, which had only been operating for 3 months, has devastated 40% of the European landmass. The food grown there will be radioactive for hundreds of years. And the New York Academy of Sciences document has just reported that almost 1 million people have died from Chernobyl. Here we have six reactors, we have six cooling pools, and another two very large cooling pools, all of which are at risk, and there's far more radiation in each of the cooling pools than there is in each reactor itself. So it takes my breath away when I really just first realized what the significance could mean. It's extremely serious, and I have to tell you, I think it means the end of the nuclear industry, thank God, and the end of uranium mining, and maybe the human race will extrapolate further and realize they must abolish nuclear weapons at long last.
And perhaps it could be the beginning of real, earnest efforts to develop clean energy.
Oh, yes. I mean, look at Canada. You've got huge amounts of geothermal energy. You're blown by wind everywhere, but I think Alberta's very wind-blown. And even in the middle of winter, you've got enough sun to solarize, you know, every single house in Canada. And it will employ hundreds of thousands of people. The GDP will go up, and everyone will feel really good with themselves.
At the first announcements of the problems at this Fukushima Daiichi complex, there was a chorus of soothing denial from nuclear boosters, including Dr. Barry Brook in Australia, I might add.
Oh, don't even talk about him.
And from the Japanese.
He's a statistician. He doesn't even know any biology, genetics, or medicine. And he has no right to talk the way he talks.
Well, we're told everything would be fixed. There was no health risk. Why did it take so many days before the real situation was reported?
I realized immediately, and in fact, many people did. I've had so many emails, I'm just overwhelmed, and Facebooks and all sorts of stuff. Those who understood deeply within themselves about nuclear energy knew immediately what it meant. The nuclear industry was struggling to put a spin on it. They had all their spin doctors out, and of course, they've got millions of dollars behind them, but it's becoming more and more apparent that they're going to get nowhere. What really aggravates me, though, is that they say the levels of radiation are low. You know, no immediate harm, no. But if you inhale or ingest these radioactive particles, the strontium-90, cesium-137, radioactive iodine, etc., you won't get your leukemia for 5 years. So, you know, there is no immediate danger, per se. Immediate danger means those poor fellows in the reactor vessels trying to do something, and they're dead men walking. Many of them are going to be dead within 2 weeks of acute radiation illness. So they're in immediate danger. Everyone else is in long-term danger of getting either leukemia, cancer, or having their genes mutated in their testicles and ovaries to affect future generations.
Yes, and we saw after Chernobyl the way that people were shunned who came from there. People didn't want to marry them. People didn't even want them around. They thought they might have radioactivity on their clothes. We're going to see that again with these Fukushima evacuees who may never be able to go home. What do you think their situation is?
Well, it's so ironic, you know, and tragic, because Hibakusha in Hiroshima and Nagasaki were in exactly the same position. The Atomic Bomb Casualty Commission, run by the US, who dropped the bombs, study these people voraciously to find out what happened to them, because they were the guinea pigs, but they never got any treatment. And people shunned them. They got cancers in large numbers. No one wanted to marry them because their genes may have been affected and mutated. So Chernobyl, yes, the same. And here we again have another absolute disaster, which, you know, if it really is ongoing, is going to contaminate the whole of the Northern Hemisphere, as did Chernobyl.
In fact, we've received radiation here in British Columbia and along the West Coast, but it's also been measured in Iceland, having arrived from Fukushima.
Oh, really?
So it at now very low amounts, they say, but they can find that signature. So it is moving around the Northern Hemisphere as we speak.
Well, when they say low amount, you know, you need 1/1,000,000th of a gram of plutonium inhaled into your lung to give you cancer. So it's they're measuring the external gamma radiation running around with Geiger counters, but that doesn't give you any indication at all of the kind of isotopes which make up the radiation that they're measuring. So they don't know what they're talking about.
That is part of my next question, and it involves your expertise as a medical doctor. The released radiation is being compared to chest x-rays or a CT scan, but I thought that radioactive particles ingested in your food or breathed in from the air acted differently in your body from the radiation coming from outside. Can you clear up that confusion for us?
I can, yes. There are about 200 new elements made when you fission uranium in a reactor, all of which are radioactive and man-made. Some last seconds and some last millions of years. Now, many of them emit gamma radiation like X-rays, but many do not. So when they're measuring the external dose, in other words, if you're enveloped in a cloud of radioactive elements, you'll get an external dose like an X-ray. But the most important thing for everyone to understand is if you inhale plutonium or americium or curium or radioactive iodine, if the elements become bioconcentrated at each step of the food chain, algae, crustaceans, little fish, big fish, humans, or in the plants, the lettuce, the spinach, into the milk from the grass and the cows, then you are getting inside your body these elements that locate, for instance, on bone, strontium-90, which is a very, very, very tiny amount, can mutate a single regulatory gene in a single cell to give you leukemia 5 years later or cancer 15 years later. And that applies to all of them. So people do not understand the difference between vaguely measuring some external dose from internal emitters. And that's what you all have to understand, internal emitters. And I go into that in my two books, Nuclear Madness, and the one that recently came out called Nuclear Power is Not the Answer to Global Warming, so you will understand.
We've also learned, many of us, for the first time, that so-called spent nuclear fuel is extremely dangerous. Tell us about those pools of nuclear waste.
Every year they remove 1/3 of the fuel rods from the reactors because they're so, so thermally hot and radioactively hot, and they're inefficient for the reaction anymore, and they're called spent fuel. They're put in cooling pools, which euphemistically the industry calls swimming pools. And you see 30 tons are removed every year, and so they've got 6 reactors there. A few of them are 40 years old and a few of them about 35 years old. Can you imagine how much radioactive stuff they've got in those fuel pools? Now, the very short-lived isotopes have decayed away to nothing, but the long-lived ones, the very dangerous ones, cesium, strontium, uranium, plutonium, americium, curium, neptunium, I mean, really dangerous ones, the long-lived ones, that's what the fuel pools hold. And there was a study done by von Hippel et al. At Princeton to show if a spent fuel pool went, it would just produce the most enormous amount of damage, far, far worse than a meltdown like Chernobyl in a reactor core.
And Dr. David Lockbaum from the Union of Concerned Scientists reported the spent fuel ponds in the United States pose the same risks as at Fukushima. He said most of the cooling pumps for these pools are not even connected to diesel backup generators, and none of them have battery backup power. Can you talk to us about those risks for American nuclear power plants?
Well, I mean, it's the same as in Japan. I mean, God Almighty, David is an absolutely magnificent fellow who helped write the Generation 4 reactor chapter in my latest book. But I did not know that there weren't emergency cooling pumps for the spent fuel pools, backup diesel generators or batteries. I did not know that. I mean, how alarmingly irresponsible of the industry. These guys are engineers, and often engineers, you know, they work for the worst case possibility, i.e., what is the weakest point in the bridge, therefore will make the bridge safe. But they overlook most obvious problems. I think it's a sort of an industry which these particular men love because it's the power of the atom, and they just sort of love playing around with that, like people like driving racing cars and things. Do you know what I mean? I think there's a psychology behind it which is very strange to me as a physician.
And I want to report to you and to the listeners, I've just listened to NHK World Television, and they've reported that the Tokyo drinking water has been found to contain iodine and that it's not recommended for feeding babies anymore. And they believe that that got into the water system through polluted rivers. And a professor has measured soil 40 kilometers north of the plant, found radiation 5 centimeters deep, and says that will last in the soil for at least 30 years. So I think it's time now that we can say that a large part of Japan has been damaged by this accident and may not recover.
Well, it won't recover. I mean, these accidents go on forever because plutonium's half-life is 24,400 years. It lasts for 500,000 years. 30 tons of plutonium got out at Chernobyl. And then cesium-137, its half-life is 30 years. It lasts for 600 years. The same with strontium-90, and I could go on and on down the periodic table of the lists of all the elements. So this is ongoing, and not what's more, if a man's genes are mutated in his testicles by plutonium, which has a particular predilection for testicles, then the genes, the damaged genes, are transmitted generation to generation while the plutonium lives on, and if the man gets cremated, can be inhaled by another man and get into his testicles ad infinitum. So you could see an exponential increase in genetic disease. There are now 2,600 such diseases like diabetes, cystic fibrosis, dwarfism, and the like. My specialty is cystic fibrosis. And they will increase in frequency down the generations, and that's the legacy we leave. Random, compulsory genetic engineering for the rest of time.
Looking at the world picture, is it accurate to say that the majority of the world's nuclear reactors are situated by the ocean within range of large tsunamis?
Yes, but they're also on lakes. Lake Ontario has quite a lot. In fact, I'm going to the Darlings and Hearings tomorrow for my sins. What am I going to say to them? Are you really psychotic? You want to build two more reactors on Lake Ontario, just near Port Hope, which is built on radioactive tailings? What am I going to say to them as a physician?
Well, those plants, they said they were going to cost about $6 billion, and now the new estimate is $36 billion. It doesn't seem to matter what the price tag is. We just have to build them. Why? Why?
Well, it's the same way that they built nuclear weapons. You know, I called one of my first books Missile Envy, a la Freud, and that's what it is. I think that the etiology or the cause of this nuclear illness is the reptilian midbrain of some men's minds. And it's very interesting to read about the latest physiology of the brain, the limbic system, which produces a hormone which is rather like morphia. The two instincts which generate that wonderful hormone that makes you feel terrific in men are sex and violence. So intrinsic in nuclear weapons, and nuclear power is just an offshoot of nuclear weapons, it's the same technology, is violence.
And this is possibly resulting from a brain problem.
It's not a brain problem, it's just a normal physiological problem that we evolved with since we lived in caves, I think.
Right. I'd like to talk for a minute about President Barack Obama. You know, before he announced his candidacy, we saw prominent press coverage of his visit to a nuclear plant in Ohio. We've since learned his campaign received substantial money from nuclear power companies like Exelon, and he appointed a pro-nuclear energy secretary, physicist Stephen Chu, and they're all backing more nuclear power even after this accident. Where do you see Barack Obama on nuclear power?
Oh, look, I'm sorry. I really had such hope for the man. He's so intelligent, such a fine human being. But he's being co-opted by these nuclear people. And I heard that when he was in Chile, even after the Fukushima accident, he signed an agreement to sell Chile reactors. Now, I can't confirm that, but I did hear it. I'm sorry, but I've lost faith in Obama, which is an absolute tragedy.
And the second argument that's advanced is that everyone in Asia deserves the benefits of lights, refrigeration, the lifestyle we enjoy. If energy-hungry countries like China and India don't build lots of nuclear power plants, they will use coal, adding to climate suicide. What is your reply?
Well, they'll also get the benefits of cancer, leukemia, deformed babies, children with genetic disease for generations hence. That's a good idea too, isn't it? This is all medical. It's like when we doctors started talking about the medical effects of nuclear war, the press was stunned. They said, what are you talking about this for? This is, you know, it's national defense and security and army generals and war. And we started to describe the effect of a bomb dropping on Boston, people being vaporized out to 5 miles and third degree burns out to 20 miles and the like. And suddenly people woke up and said, oh, my God, nuclear war is bad for our health. This is all about medicine. Nuclear power poses the greatest public health hazard the world will ever see, period.
Even greater than coal, you would argue?
Oh, far, far greater, yes. But then again, coal must be stopped being burnt as we speak. You must not be digging up your coal tar sands. That's a terrible thing to do. And we've got to stop burning carbon. So I commissioned a study some years ago called Carbon Free, Nuclear Free by a brilliant physicist called Arjun Makajani. You can find it at ieer.org. The present renewable technology, which is very cheap, can supply all the energy America needs by 2040.
And now we find that America is saddled with 40-year-old technology, but nobody seems to be able to close a nuclear plant and clean up the mess. Can you talk to us about decommissioning?
Well, to decommission a reactor, you have to wait until it cools, radioactively cools down for about 40 years until anyone can get near it. It's actually has to be taken apart by robots, by remote control. It's so radioactive. And then it's got to be taken somewhere. In other words, you can never get rid of nuclear waste. You just transport it from one place to another, exposing more and more and more workers, usually men, and their testicles, and therefore future generations, to more and more and more radiation. A very big, large nuclear reactor has never been decommissioned.
And I've been told that the cost of doing so, even if we could, would be as much as building the plant in the first place.
That's correct, or even more. And I write about decommissioning and the cost in my book, Nuclear Power's Not the Answer.
Right. Talk to us for a minute about that book, would you? I think it's really important.
Well, the first chapter deals with the fact that nuclear power in its own right induces a huge amount of global warming gas because it relies upon a vast industrial infrastructure, mining millions of tons of uranium. And you know about that in Canada. Your uranium was used for Trinity, Fat Man and Little Boy, the first three bombs that were ever exploded on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. It was used for all the bombs America built till 1957. So you know about that. Then you have to crush millions of tons of uranium into a fine powdered dust. And then you have to extract the uranium itself from the soil that's been mined. Then you have to enrich the uranium, and that's enriched. Well, first, uranium hexafluoride is formed at Port Hope at the Cameco plant, then sent to Paducah, Kentucky, where they use two huge coal-fired plants to enrich the uranium. So at every step of the fuel chain, large quantities of global warming gas are formed. Then the next chapter is on the cost. and the hidden costs and the support of the government. You can't buy insurance against nuclear power. The government covers it, but not nearly enough. And it's called the Price-Anderson Act in America. But most of it goes back to the utility, not to people who are dead and dying, or families are. The next chapter deals with the basic fundamentals of radiation and how internal emitters cause cancer and how they cause genetic disease. Just a basic first-year medical lecture, but easy to understand. And then I go into first, second, third and fourth generation reactors. I go into the industry and how it continually lies and obfuscates information. Then I go into what people can do about it, I think. It's a quick read, but if you know the data in that book, you'll be able to argue with anyone, including Prime Minister Harper, and beat him.
And the title is?
Nuclear Power is Not the Answer to Global Warming, and it's published by The New Press.
Right. Well, now, back in Tokyo, we find the Tokyo Power Company has announced rolling blackouts will continue into May and then reappear in the summer when air conditioning season appears. With the multiple nuclear plants shut down, the utility says it does not have enough electricity to support full manufacturing in Japan. So it looks like depending on nuclear power can severely damage your economy once an accident like this happens.
Correct. Yes, I think this is going to be the end of Japan as an economic giant. If there's a real meltdown, like Chernobyl, and blows over Japan, that's the end of Japan. That is the end of Japan.
Yes, it is a small island, and I've always thought that France is threatened by just such a complete breakdown. They've got 75%, I think, of their power coming from nuclear. If something irradiated that beautiful country and the public revolt, how would France even begin to cope?
Well, you know, every corner you turn in France is a huge cooling tower. And the French love their food, their wine, their cheese, you know. It's radioactive, some of it, because nuclear power plants, as they operate normally, routinely emit radioactive elements into the air and water all the time. And then often there are accidents and they emit much more radiation than they plan to do. The French, I've got a French son-in-law who's a count, they tend to be pretty arrogant. They are terribly ignorant because the French reactors were all built by the French government. Le Monde was kind of run by the French government, their newspaper, and they don't know anything about nuclear power, but they're learning, by God. I mean, it's a disaster. Look, nuclear power makes war obsolete. Europe's covered with nuclear reactors. If the Second World War was fought today, Europe would be uninhabitable for the rest of time. And that holds true for the rest of time because even if the reactors are shut down, you've got all these huge, huge pools full of thousands, hundreds of thousands of tons of radioactive waste, which lasts forever, forever.
I'm Alex Smith with famous anti-nuclear spokeswoman Helen Caldicott as we face nuclear fear in Japan. Already, Helen, American companies are saying new nuclear plants may not be financially feasible in Texas, Maryland, and other places. One CEO said it's been stalled for another decade anyway by falling prices of natural gas. It isn't even competitive with solar these days. Realistically now, Helen Caldicott, what do you see happening in the nuclear industry?
Oh, I think it's the end, as I said earlier in the program. It's the end of the nuclear industry. As soon as I heard about this accident, that's what I thought. It's the end. It's the end of uranium mining. Thank God. And I said I've been doing this crazy work for 40 years. I said all that time it will take a major meltdown to end the industry. And here we have it, not one. We've got six possible meltdowns and cooling pools as well.
Where should anti-nuclear campaigners focus now? What are the key places and issues?
Look, go to my webpage called nuclearfreeplanet.org and you'll get a huge amount of information. I've also got a Facebook, Dr. Helen Caldicott, and we post every up-to-date article we can find so that you'll learn all about it. So information is ammunition. Jefferson said an informed democracy will behave in a responsible fashion. You know, we've got to have a revolution, and a nuclear revolution against nuclear psychosis, and that means doing an Egypt or a Wisconsin or, you know, what we did in the 80s to try and end the nuclear arms race, millions and millions of us. So it's got to be peaceful and sagacious. and dignified, but we can do that.
On a personal level, Helen, what have you been up to lately?
Oh, well, I'm doing a trip now. I've just been up to Montreal for a speech. I'm now in Boston having a day of rest. Tomorrow I go to the Darlington hearings. I go to Ottawa, probably for a press conference and a talk at a hospital to doctors. And on Saturday there is a very large day-long conference with me and many other of my colleagues talking about the medical effects of just what we've been discussing in Ottawa. If you go to the Global Physicians for Survival webpage, you'll find where this conference is and you can come to it. I have a radio program which is a weekly thing called If You Love This Planet that should play on every station in every country at the moment, I suppose, because it's mostly focused upon, well, global warming and nuclear power and weapons and the medical implications. And my webpage really is an outreach to the younger generation who know absolutely nothing about nuclear because they grew up without knowing about it, but they're Facebooking it and they're Twittering it and all of that stuff. So I'm hoping to get into their hearts and souls and brains, and I think now with this catastrophe that will happen.
As we wrap up, is there something else you would want listeners to know?
I would want the Canadians to stand up and do the right thing. They're fine, good, honest, decent people. Now get going. Stop sitting in front of your computers and get out there and stop this madness. You are one of the major suppliers of uranium to the world. Cameco of Port Hope supplies the whole world with nuclear fuel rods made at Port Hope. So stop it. Close Cameco down, period. You export two things. You export wheat for life and you export uranium for death.
And you know, more than half of our listeners now are Americans. How about them?
Americans, you know, deep in your hearts and souls, you must close down all the nuclear reactors. If you can't do it overnight, do it next week. No, I'm really serious. This is a matter of extreme medical urgency. You've got the message. Do it.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock. It's been my honor to interview Dr. Helen Caldicott, who is simply the strongest voice for sanity for nuclear affairs for almost four decades. Our website is ecoshock.org, but more importantly, follow Helen through her website, helencaldicott.com, and her weekly radio show at ifyoulovethisplanet.org. Dr. Caldicott, thank you for sharing your valuable time with us.
Thank you, Alex.
This is Alex Smith. As this program goes to air, the situation at the Fukushima Daiichi reactor remains critical, almost 2 weeks after the initial earthquake and tsunami. On Thursday in Japan, NHK World Television reports some lights were turned on in the control room of Reactor 3 and in Reactor 2. This allowed workers a quick chance to look at some of the temperature and pressure gauges. Photos have been released from inside one reactor building, and the control room suffered significant damage, possibly from later explosions inside the plant. Workers had to evacuate several times that day due to high radiation, continuing smoke from some reactors, and abnormal temperatures within others. And there were two strong earthquakes measuring up to 6.0 on the Richter scale. Japanese television reports reactor number one was overheated, reaching over 400 degrees centigrade, 100 degrees hotter than design specifications. Smoke continued from reactor number three, the cause unknown. If the source is exposed fuel rods, that reactor contains some plutonium. It's a major worry. The exodus of residents from Tokyo toward the southern part of the country continues, including evacuation of consulate workers from more than a dozen countries. I'm Alex Smith. Radio EcoShock will return in 1 minute. We will help you deal with headline shock as we talk with peak oil psychologist Karen McMahon. She lives just 35 miles from an aging nuclear plant in New England that is coming up for a license renewal. Stay tuned.